Hi, everybody. I don't know when we are going to release this episode, so I don't know if I should be saying Merry Christmas because I am recording this on Christmas Eve. Just like the Caroline episode, we may release them both at the same time, and if we do, great. Merry Christmas, and if you're listening to it afterwards, Merry Christmas for this past Christmas. You do not get a bonus Merry Christmas for the upcoming Christmas that is in 300 and some odd days. This is our episode with Eric Sales. Eric Sales is a photographer, professional guide. This dude does all kinds of stuff. He actually showed me around Snowbird quite a bit when I was out there doing these interviews. I had a great time. The dude absolutely rips. He is also a pro skier. I mean, the dude is the real deal. He runs an operation, a heli skiing operation, based in Japan and other places as well, but Japan is where he's going to be for the next 10 weeks, called Caldera Guides. Definitely check them out. Free Skier Magazine just ran a contest to win a trip out there. Congratulations to whoever wins. I hope it was me, but it probably is not. It's a great thing that he does, and it's you get to ski with some of the best skiers on the planet in some of the best snow in the world. So I don't know what else you could ask for. So definitely check out Caldera Guides, check out Eric's page, and let us know what you think of this episode. Obviously, like I always say, leave us a review on iTunes. That helps a ton. Leave us a review on whatever medium you're listening to us on. We will have select YouTube videos out too, so be sure to follow us on YouTube if you don't already, which only like 25 of you or something follow us on YouTube, but... So subscribe to our page. It's just Out of Podcast, I think, or Out of Bounds Podcast. You'll see the little alien logo on it, so you'll know it's us. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, yada, 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 yada. Make sure you leave us a review on social media, or on, why do I keep saying social media? Leave us a review on iTunes. What else we got? Oh, yeah, make sure you check out Caldera Guides. I am pulling up... It's just Caldera Guides. It's Caldera Guides on social media. Or you can follow Eric. You can follow Eric at eSales, S-E-S-A-L-E-S ski, eSales ski on social media. The dude's awesome. He's like the dude behind the scenes that not everybody knows, but that knows everybody, if that makes sense. If it doesn't, that's what it is. I hope everybody's having a good holiday. Pretty soon it'll be New Year's, so happy New Year's in advance, maybe. But anyway, I hope you enjoy the episode. Let us know what you think. Hit me up at adam@outofpodcast.com if you like to send emails. Otherwise, just shoot us a DM on some social media. Thanks, guys.
So who are you? What do you do?
Yeah, my name's Eric Sales. I'm a guide and photographer based at Snowbird, Utah.
Sick.
And my guide season takes me to Japan, Alaska, and South America.
That's awesome. How long have you been doing that?
Oh, man. Full-time for like 3 years now, and part-time on trips here and there for 6 years.
Sick.
Yeah.
What got you into it? What got you into skiing in general? I guess that's probably where we should start instead of like, how'd you start becoming a ski guide? I mean, I imagine that's like you start by liking skiing and then you go from there.
Yes. I mean, skiing was kind of my babysitter growing up. You know, it's like both my parents worked and we live right next to a ski hill.
Right.
So I was in little Grom daycare and learned to ski there, started doing mogul racing, and then eventually evolved into ski racing. And that was kind of something that dominated my life in high school. After ski racing, I just decided that I wanted to have fun again. You know, I was kind of over this competitive mentality, and I started skiing up at Mount Washington at Tuckerman's Ravine a lot. Ended up doing search and rescue there and kind of getting some certifications and, you know, expanding my skill set to be able to go out with other partners in other locations and feel confident.
Right.
Yeah, and then years later, I had moved to Alaska and then came back from Alaska, moved to Utah, and have been traveling a lot in between.
So how long have you been in Snowbird?
This is going to be year number 7.
Sick.
At Snowbird. Yeah.
Why do you like it here? I mean, I know why I like it here, and I've only been here for a day, so I can imagine you have some good reasons.
Yeah, I mean, snowbird is a huge part of it, but Salt Lake City is just as equal of a part. You know, I live down in the city and I'm a 25-minute drive from Snowbird. I can work out of my office at home all day and then come up and ski for 3 hours, tram laps, fall line, chasing the tram that I came up on. And there's very few places that I can do that.
Right.
We have great food. We have great bars. We have an international airport and a huge community of people. And I think that community is really what sets this place as my long-term destination.
Yes.
It's just, I have so many friends here, and you show up with no one and you walk onto the tram deck and you run into four or five people.
Yeah. We ran into five people today. Like, exactly. I mean, it's crazy. Like, you're riding the chair with pretty much whoever. I mean, it's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah.
So you have no plans on leaving here anytime soon, I'm guessing.
No, I don't think so. Okay. I definitely love Snowbird.
It is incredible. But you are going somewhere next week, right? You're going to Japan?
Yep.
Sick.
Yeah. So I've been spending a ton of time in Japan over the last several years. And really what it is it's the most consistent snow I've ever seen in the world.
Yeah.
And that's my biggest draw. You know, last year was insane. It was better than I've ever seen it. And Japan is normally really, really awesome.
Yeah.
So it was just like the next level of features that we would normally jump off were 30 feet down, you know, and we had such a massive snowpack and it was so consistent. Like, I definitely skied some of the deepest conditions I've ever skied in my life on repeat for like almost 2 months last year. Other than that, it's another thing like Snowbird. Like, the skiing is incredible, but there's so much more. And the culture, the people, the food, especially the food. I love food. is really insane. And having been in the same part of Japan for several years now, I've been able to explore a lot of the local restaurants with kanji menus, which is always a bit intimidating at first when you get there and you're like, wow, I'm fully illiterate.
Yeah.
And kind of just pointing at things. But the Japanese culture is always to kind of help you have the best possible experience. And people have been so nice and welcoming to me there to recommend different food, recommend different places, different onsens. And it's really an incredible place.
That's awesome. Yeah. I imagine it's a little bit of a culture shock when you first get there for the first time. Definitely. is it weird, or did you get used to it quickly? Like, I guess, or were people accommodating? I know you just said like their idea is to make you have the best time possible, but how do they do that? Like, what was different about that? Cause you go a lot of places where like shit's just weird. Like, it's just different, you know?
Totally. So I was lucky. My dad had been to Japan for work quite a few times.
Okay.
And he gave me some really good advice. He said, as long as you try, you're going to be fine. And
really?
That was the biggest thing, is just try to be respectful of other people's cultural norms and understand that you're going to mess up and that they're going to probably think it's hilarious. But as long as you're trying to be respectful and to honor them, they will do the same for you and help you as much as they possibly can. So that's kind of always been my mantra, not just traveling in Japan, but all over the world, of be there and don't be the annoying American or annoying XYZ tourist that you might see.
Because you don't know everything, right? Like, and everywhere's a little even here's different than it is back in Western Mass. Like, I mean, everything's a little bit different. And I think that's good advice, because there's so many things that you don't get. And if you just go like, you know, everything, or you don't care, you're not going to have as good of a time. And you're probably not going to have a time at all. You're just going to get lost. And people are just going to be like, fuck this guy. Like, this another American guy. Like, great.
Totally. And I was lucky too. I mean, I had some friends that connected me in with other people out there.
Okay.
So I had that little baseline of like, showed up, hop on the transfer. I'm out in Niseko 3.5 hours later. And being shown around by some locals that, you know, had friends of a friends of a friend. And that was hugely helpful. And those are people that I called close friends now. You know, this is going to be my 10th year out there. So it's kind of crazy.
That's awesome.
From random acquaintance to somebody that, you know, we talk once a week now.
How do you, and you spend a lot of time there. I mean, like, you're there for 2 months, you said, right?
Yeah, 10 weeks.
Jesus Christ, man. Like, that's basically, I mean, that's a quarter of a year, basically. Yeah, like, like, that's such a long time. How do you manage being away from home? Or do you just make it your home while you're there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole concept of home is really hard to define.
Okay.
You know, and I've been lucky to have fostered relationships in places all over the world that every time I go back, it's like homecoming.
Right.
You know, and right now I'm spending about 6 months out of the country a year. But in the last 3 years, it's been a lot more than that.
Yeah.
There was a time where it was 10. You know, and I was on adventures that I had no idea what was going to happen. You know, it's like I rode a motorcycle across the Silk Road from Pakistan into China and then back into India. And like, It was, I've been on some adventures out there where I'm like, wow, this is really out of my comfort zone. But Japan and South America is another place that I constantly go back to. It's like having another family there. You have a whole set of friends. I stay at the same apartment every year. I know all the restaurants. You see the change over time and you just become a part of that community. And, you know, as long as you treat it like you would your community at home, where you are looking out for the best interest of everyone around you and, you know, trying to propel it in a positive direction, usually it's pretty easy to fit in.
Right. Has it become more of a tourist destination over the last few years? Because it seems like in every ski video, Japan is like where everybody's going. And like, everybody talks about it. Whereas like 5 years ago, I just don't remember it being the same thing.
Yeah.
But now it seems like everybody talks. So like, how has that changed the vibe over there, I guess? Are they, you know how when something becomes a tourist destination, they start to accommodate it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. They kind of do things for the tourists. Mm-hmm. Like you see that at ski resorts all the time.
Yeah.
Have they started doing that there? Or is it the same kind of old school vibe that... It seems like it's...
Depends on where you go.
Okay.
You know, it's like 10 miles apart from each other, you might have this tiny little Japanese hill and a mega resort. So, and Japan has the largest number of ski resorts of any country in the world. So it is incredibly diverse. You've definitely seen massive growth in the tourism sector in Niseko, with Niseko United and also Rizutsu and Kiroro. Those are kind of the big three on North Island.
Okay.
And that has changed how the place is pretty substantially. Both for positive and for negative, because I mean, I run a guide operation out there. So having really high end food, having great transportation, having modern lifts and modern marketing departments that can support my athlete teams that go out there is hugely advantageous to me. But at the same time, every single person that I bring out, whether it's a friend or a guest, I try to make sure they still get to see real Japan. You know, we go to specific restaurants with people that I've, you know, been going to the same restaurant, eating the same incredible food for years and years and years, or onsens, hot springs way up in the mountains that nobody else is going to go to. And I think that's why I feel pretty mixed about it. Like the Japan that I knew when I first went is definitely not what Niseko is anymore. But at the same time, it is still this powder paradise that now has all of the 5-star amenities and access to, you know, real, what we call real Japan in quotes. Only 20 minutes away.
Yeah.
So it's a mix now.
I imagine that's helped your business though, right? Like, I mean, it's
big time.
Yeah. That, because like, that's one of the things that people worry about, I guess, is like getting there and the travel of it. Like when I went to Portillo, like the issue was like, how are we going to get there? And like they set it up for you, but like you're sitting in traffic for who the fuck knows how long. I mean, you're like, you're on that windy road for hours sometimes. And like the planning, I think they do it really well once you get there, but when you're in Santiago, it's a little harder to navigate, especially for it's like you just people are like trying to grab your bags for you like as soon as you get off, like and expect you to pay them and like that kind of thing. Like it's a weird deal, so I imagine that adds some comfort to the guest side of thing for you.
Definitely. And I mean, we're really dialed at this point. Like we basically send a staffer to the airport, and as soon as you get to the airport, everything is curated until you're back at the airport. But Japan allows for that because it's just their culture. You know, everybody takes a ton of pride in their job. Everybody wants to be perceived as being successful, you know, and I think how that's defined is very different there than it is here. You know, it's not about how much money you make or how much quote unquote power you might have. It's about how much you believe in your job and how much of a service you can offer to others.
Yeah.
And that's been like... Japan is the easiest place to work because everybody supports your business in a positive way. And it's like, I do work in Chile too. And I'm very selective about the vendors that I'll select down there because you kind of don't know what you're going to get. Like if you don't have a relationship and you haven't vetted them out, you have no idea how it's going to be.
Yeah.
Japan, I have a lot more confidence when I, you know, hire a driver or hire XYZ person to help my business.
Huh. It's pretty crazy, man. Like, I mean, and I think you're right though. Like the culture is definitely different, and like what success is. Like it seems, and I don't know anything about Japan, but like, have you ever watched that Netflix documentary, Euro Dreams of Sushi?
Yeah,
it's and that's a good one. But like, I mean, that like gives a pretty good perception of like what people do. Like they take extreme pride in their work. Like that's what they want to do, no matter if you're a sushi chef, or you're just driving a bus. Like that's, you take pride in your work. Whereas here, it's not so much that it's like, I need to get my paycheck and I need to leave, you know?
Exactly.
It's which is kind of a shame. Like I almost wish it was more like that here, but I guess it makes that a little more special. So, but I don't know.
I mean, looking at sushi culture alone is really fascinating for me. So a good example is last year I was there for New Year's, and New Year's is the biggest holiday of the year in Japan. It's this huge celebration. It's awesome. Highly recommend it if you can ever make it. But my girlfriend was with me, and we were staying in the city of Sapporo, which is very big Japanese-style city, you know, skyscrapers, right. Neon lights, the whole nine yards. And we were trying to select a place for dinner, and I just found a place. It was like full kanji title, five-star rating, set menu, sushi restaurant, let's do it. So we walk over there, and there's six spots at a bar. And two of them are open, so we go over, we sit down. And this older, he must have been like 65, 70-year-old Japanese sushi chef walks out from behind the curtain, bows to us, brings us a menu, and it only has three options on it, right? And I can't understand anything. It's straight kanji writing. So we pick the middle one, which is they're priced. So it's like, all right, $50 for dinner.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do. And the care that he took to create every single thing, and he stands there in front of you, like, we'll show you the special Hokkaido sea scallop shell, and then open it up, shuck it right there, slice these tiny pieces of sashimi, and it's like the most amazing food you've ever had. And the whole time, it's like you're an honored guest, you know? And,
yeah, right.
Everything's made from scratch, from the wasabi to the soy sauce to the sake, and they take incredible pride in every single piece of what they do. And I think you've seen that in ski resorts too.
Yeah.
It's like they're adapting to kind of this whole world of off-piste skiing. That's been a big discussion there over the last really 5 years. There's been some really unfortunate things that have happened out there with groups getting lost. And it snows every day and there's high alpine terrain there. So, you know, visibility and just general knowledge can be big issues. But they're constantly trying to improve from the infrastructure level to the backcountry access level just to create a better guest experience. And that's something that I look at as like, yes, you know, it's not like South America where you see, you know, the Marte lift in Las Leñas that hasn't been renovated in 40 years and is hanging off the edge of a cliff. You're like, I don't know about this. Japan, it's just the way that they are. You know, the culture is so unique and so prideful that it creates an incredible travel experience and is somewhere that I really, really love. And I come back and you hit TSA and you're like, oh God, I'm in the USA again. Is somebody yelling at you, like to unpack all my camera gear? I'm just like, oh no,
that's gotta be freaking miserable.
So,
yeah, they made me unpack all the podcast stuff like on the way here. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not even going anywhere. Like, it's just microphones and literally like one recorder.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that I promise I'm not doing anything sketchy. Like,
totally.
We don't need to delay me. And I'm dumb as shit. And I booked my flights. So, like, I booked like a 4:30 a.m. flight and like left my house at like 3:30, airport's half an hour away.
Yes.
And left with like 20 minutes to spare before my plane boarded.
Yeah.
And like it was definitely tight. So I was like, dude, it's nothing important. Like, I was actually getting frustrated at 4 o'clock in the morning, and that I don't think that's happened before, but it's too early or too late, depending on how you're looking at it, to be frustrated. Cause either way, you're just not at that point, you're just not ready to be frustrated.
Yeah.
So how did you get into guiding? What exactly do you do? You have your own company now.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you had that?
Yeah. So this is our first year of independent operations.
Okay.
So we've worked with other people in the past to run trips, but this year my partner Aiden and I, jumped, you know, we were like, we want more creative control over the operation because we're doing high end media work as well.
Right.
And on top of that, we wanted to stay in Japan longer. That was really like what it came down to. I still have a super positive relationship with some of my previous employers, because I'm doing something different. You know, I'm there for 10 weeks. They're there for a week or two and we always hang out and, you know, have beers and it's great. But, first full year of independent operation. And, I'm really psyched to, you know, take the reins in this regard, especially on the media side of things. It's very similar to what I was doing in the past with general guests.
Mm.
Media this year, we have huge projects that couldn't be more stoked on, and a huge roster of athletes that are coming out, many of whom are people that I'm very close with. So I'm like, you've got to come to Japan. You know, like, this place is mental. And we found a way to combine those friends with, you know, media dollars to come and do real projects.
Right. So when you say media, like, what does that mean? Like, how do you get people to be involved with your group as opposed to another guide group?
Yeah. Well, I think we're the only ones that are doing what we're doing in Japan, at least.
Okay.
Which is, you know, we have a full-time media house right in downtown Harafu, which is downtown Niseko United. we work really closely with Evan Wilcox and the rest of the team in marketing at Niseko. So we get a ton of access that allows us to do really cool things. Mm. And we have a lot of experience in the region. You know, it's like I've been there for a ton of time and our other guides have come. Most of our other guides have been professional athletes or are still currently professional athletes.
Yeah.
And have worked with us in that capacity, hit many of the errors that we'll take people out to do and are familiar with these zones. So it's really the combination of knowledge base with an incredible media team of filmers and the access that Niseko United allows us to have that allow me to create this kind of cohesive package to sell the sponsors. And those guys, I can basically walk into any conversation and be like, this is what I guarantee you will get. And I right. know that it's the best value and it's incredibly high quality. With right. a great athlete team that knows me and believes in me and believes in the rest of my team. And right. it's those relationships that really enable these projects to happen. But the competitive advantage that we have is really from just years of being in this place.
Right. And you're there for a long time. Like that. Yeah. So you get it. Like, you know, exactly. every in and out, like yeah. you can take people where you want. Like yeah. it basically is a home for you.
Yes.
What's the name of the company?
Caldera Guides.
Okay, cool. That's, dude, that's good for you, man. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So you also take photos.
Yep.
How long have you been doing that? How'd you get into that?
Yeah, so I actually got really injured, years ago now. I think that was 2011. I hurt my back pretty badly up in Alaska, and I just needed to take a little bit of a step back from okay. skiing for a while. And photography was a huge outlet for me to still be stimulated in a way that wasn't going to negatively impact my body.
Right.
And yeah, as I became healthy again and started to have more and more opportunities in skiing, the photography just made sense. It was another tool in my skill set that allowed me to work with sponsors on a whole nother level and right. and get on. Really, I didn't really care about making money or anything like that. I just wanted to go right. on trips with my friends.
Right.
You know? And I mean, I guess I'm still kind of there where it's like,
that's almost the best part kind of though. Yeah. Like you yeah. have more fun that way when you're not super stressed about it. Like they're taking care of your trip. Like that's yeah. dude, that's the way to do it, I think.
Yeah.
So why do you like taking photos? I guess, cause it's a weird thing to me and it's something that I don't really understand fully because like yeah. I like to go skiing. I don't really want to stop and take pictures at like, but I imagine that it's something you actually enjoy doing, right?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Okay. I mean, I think I try to strike a very serious balance in my work
okay.
Of actually skiing.
I was going to say, photos. You rip. It's not like you're yeah. a guy that doesn't ski. Like, you ski extremely well. But that's yeah. there is a thing. Like, there's definitely been photographers that I've met that don't ski at all
yeah.
or don't snowboard at all. They don't really do anything. They're just out there to get the shot, and yeah. then they move on. Like, it's a real... not a real job, but a real job. You know, yeah. that's all they do is they look at it as work and that's yeah. all. So why do you like it?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely satisfying in its own way to okay. be able to walk away for a moment and be like, this moment was so incredible. Here is what my version of it looks like. And being able to show that to somebody and allow them into that experience in a way is really unique. Like I can tell you as much as I can possibly breathe that Japan has some of the deepest snow in the world. Mm. But if I show you one of the photos that I have of Lexi from last year, right after 6 feet of snow, where she's just fully, you know, trenched up to her yeah. shoulders, that immediately gets the point across. And it's
right.
it's a cool and unique way to tell a story. And I think at the end of the day, as a producer, as a guide, as a photographer, and as an athlete, what I'm really trying to do at the end is to tell that story, is to expose people to these places and let them come experience them for themselves and enjoy them, because it's been such a formative part of my life to go abroad to see these things, and photography allows me to capture that and give other people a small taste that maybe helps them understand who I am and also maybe helps to ignite some type of fire for them to go and do whatever it is they want to do. And right. maybe not go to the same place, but go somewhere right. or see something.
How, so I asked someone else this and they didn't really have an answer for me. So we'll see if you do. How is social media and just like quick Instagram pictures and like that yep. kind of thing changed what you do? Like, because there's like, it's all instant gratification right now. It yep. seems like, so what do you do about that? I guess, because the content yeah. that you work so hard to create is being consumed so quickly.
Yeah. It has and hasn't changed. Okay. Kind of how I feel about this whole process, because it's become a necessary part of any proposal. You know, it's
yeah.
For all of the athletes that I work with, I know that we need to produce as close to real time, high quality Instagram content as possible.
Right.
But if you look at submissions to Powder or anything like that, it's the same as it's always been. You know, it's yeah. end of season. You send your photos in, you wait a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You maybe hear back that you got some stuff on hold. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. And it's kind of the same process, but I think it's most important to be able to walk away and feel fulfilled about what you've done. And for that reason, I've been doing a lot more commercial work. And the commercial work is easier in a way because you can talk with the marketing director, and that's the only person that you really have to make happy. It's between the marketing director and the team of athletes to be like, what is the vision for this project? Like Julian Carr and I are doing a project in Japan this year, and it's on heritage and all of these other, you know, key themes that we've talked about. And we've created this look and feel of what that's going to be like. And, you know, those photos are going to get used. You've basically already been paid for them. So it's easier to execute a project and to take a personal step back from the world that is Instagram and not care if I'm getting, you know, 100,000 likes or 100 likes.
Right.
Because the people that actually need my content are a whole nother entity, and they have this crafted vision of what they already want.
Mm.
So for me, Instagram isn't a big focus. Like, I spend some time on there. I do stories, but I don't post a lot.
Yeah.
And really, I use it to stay connected with other athletes and see what's going on and see how conditions are and, you know, just keep that connection of, I guess that's the point of social media, right? Originally is to stay connected with your friends.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a good thing. I mean, I mean, I don't think it's a good thing right now. I think everybody, myself included, like yeah. I have to overuse it, especially yeah. for this show. Like
totally.
That's how we reach so many people. Like and mm-hmm. a friend tells a friend, or like yep. you can tag somebody in a post, and like yep. that's how the growth gets better and better is through Instagram. But it's, I don't want to do it. I wish there yeah. was a way that like a freaking robot could
totally
just put it up. I was talking to Caroline Gleick yesterday yeah. about Instagram, and obviously she's good at Instagram and has
extremely
a big following.
Yeah.
But like, she kind of looks at it as like storytelling. And,
yeah.
And I'm like, okay, yeah, like I get it. Like I think mm-hmm. storytelling is definitely part of it, but it's almost like a mandatory thing now.
Yeah.
Like you have to be on social media.
The way that I look at it is really different from that, I think, because when I was a little kid and I was watching ski movies, right? Those people weren't social media famous.
No.
And if you look at the people that are excelling and pushing the ski industry right now, quite a few of them are not social media famous. Or if they are, they have other people running their social content like Candide, you know?
And yeah.
I've kind of always approached social media as there's two options, you know? You can use it to basically show off your skiing and be like, hey, check this out. I'm doing this. I'm working with these people, blah, 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 blah. And get exposure to get greater sponsorships that will actually help you succeed and get into a movie like TGR or work on high-end commercial projects.
Mm.
Or it can be your full-time job. And I don't think there's, it's just a choice, you know. One isn't necessarily better than the other, because yeah. I think Caroline works extremely hard and does yeah. a really, really good job at her content and how she curates it. And rightfully so, she gets paid to do that.
Yeah.
That's one part of a company's marketing plan.
Yeah.
That company also needs people like Candide, people like Thane Rich, people
yeah.
like Dash that are just at the top of the game of skiing.
Right.
And, you know, very different types of skiers, free skiers, but those guys help brands in a totally different way.
Right.
Like people are buying Candide's factions because Candide skis on
it's
those.
It's the only reason, you know, people like, are buying his skateboards yeah, because of that. Dude.
Totally.
It's incredible.
Totally. So I think they're just really different paths at the end of the day, and trying to decide on how you want your career to go is a big determining factor. Like Caroline has almost exclusive control over whatever she wants to do.
Yeah.
She can go to the Himalayas. She can go yeah. to Canada. She knows she's going to get
supported.
She can
say, I'm doing this.
Exactly.
Support me. Yeah.
Where if you're working for TGR, you're working for Audi or yeah. any of these other brands, they're like, all right, we want to do this. Are you in? You know, and the opportunities right. are a little more limited.
Right.
Different types of skiers, different types of goals
yeah.
and different types of financial compensation. So I think social media skiing, I guess if you want to call it that, is an interesting phenomenon,
yeah.
which has really helped to shape what the ski industry looks like over the last really 5 years, especially.
Mm.
But it's not necessarily a negative thing, because if Caroline gets people to be psyched and go out skiing,
I'm the goal.
Super happy about that. Yeah. You know, just as much as if Thane skis some crazy line in level one and people are like, huh, maybe I want to go to Canada, but I don't want to do that. You know, I'm still stoked to see skiing progress as an industry and to see it grow and to support these high level athletes in very different realms of the ski world.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You're right. It's a different, it is kind of a different thing. And it doesn't mean that like you can't ski. Like, I mean, it's, somebody asked me, one of the Instagram questions that they sent in for Caroline was like, how does it feel being a social media skier? But she's not, which is annoying, but it's also not like, you're not just a social media skier. And I know that's not how this particular person meant it. Like, so I don't think it's a bad, like they didn't mean it in a negative way, but that's kind of how people look at it. But I guess the response to that is like, you're not just a social media skier. Yeah. You can be a social media skier as long as you actually know how to ski.
Totally.
You know, like that's, I think the biggest thing. So we'll see what happens with this. It's so new still, like that we just don't know where this shit's going to go.
Yeah. So. And one of my least favorite parts about skiing, honestly, we were talking about this on the lift earlier today, is that it has this competitive ideology that's a total falsity.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I work with a bunch of junior athletes out here in Alta and Snowbird, and they all care about being the best. When I come in and I say, being the best skier doesn't mean that you're actually the best person on the hill every single day. It means that you know how to send an email. It means that you know how to work with photographers. It means that you know how to not be a diva.
Right.
And it's such a small industry. As soon as you start making enemies, you doom yourself for the future. And you people shouldn't be bummed about the success of others. You know, I'm super happy for Caroline.
Yeah.
Because the more skiers that I see that can actually succeed and make a living is better for the sport.
Yeah.
And that's really what I want to see progress is, you know, people still being able to ski.
Yeah.
Like the ski industry is kind of dying.
A little bit.
You know, and it's scary.
It's a weird thing. And like, in a way it's dying, but in a way I think it is getting better. Like there's signs of like health that I think are important for like for the ski industry. Like skis are getting more fun. Like they're getting focused on fun. They're not just like hop turn skis. Like you can roll your edges over a little bit more and you can be a little more free in the type of skiing that you're doing. I think the backcountry thing is going to help a lot. Like people are getting into the backcountry more often. So the cost is going to come down, hopefully, for people. So I think it's turning around, but I agree. It is like, it's like a dying thing that you're like, oh, it actually needs this to survive. And now we're kind of figuring it out. So it's weird, but I agree. I think it opens the door for more people. We were talking about this with podcasts, you know, like it's like everybody is getting a podcast right now. And I don't think it's a bad thing because if somebody else has a podcast that's super successful, that opens the door for me to have sponsors. That opens the door for us to do our own thing. Like I'd be, I'm totally, if you want to start one, shit, I mean, I'll set you up, dude. I'm down. Like, I'm sure you'd have great stories to tell. And that's the thing is like, you want to hear things from different kinds of people and get different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And that's what it should be with skiing, with podcasting, with fucking social media, with anything. So we'll see how it goes over the next few years.
Yeah. And for me, it's just, as much as I want to see this growth in the ski industry, it's a really personal thing too. I just want to have fun. You know, at the end of the day,
it's your life.
Job, I go out there to rip with my friends, and a lot of my friends aren't pro skiers.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I go skiing with family members. I go skiing with my girlfriend's cousins, all sorts of people at all sorts of ability levels. And any day that I'm out there on the hill, kind of experiencing that stoke, I don't have to be dropping into the gnarliest line to have a good day and to have a good time.
Right.
You know, it's, I just think the whole ski industry needs to take itself a little less seriously and look at it as recreation and spread that to people.
Yeah. And even if you look at it like a sport, I don't think it looking at it like a sport is a bad thing either, or looking at it competitively is a bad thing, but there's got to be a place for it. And it seems like there's less of a place for that. Like, I mean, there's Freeride World Tour and like all these big things like that you can go and compete in, but those aren't the places that people actually want to go ski and actually want to do as much anymore. Like people want, like the reason that other stick and ball sports are super popular is because you can play at a recreational level as a kid and you feel an attachment to it from a super young age. So I think skiing's got to do kind of a better job at skiing as if it's a person, but like, it's like the industry as a whole needs to do a better job of promoting that, I think.
Totally.
Because that's what you want. You want kids to be psyched. You want to make it as easy as possible for people to get on the hill.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the idea, but I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah,
I hope so.
I hope it's all good, man. So let's talk guiding stuff again. So where do you go just just to Japan, or do you do other stuff as well?
No, I kind of go all over the place. South America has been my, I guess, second big destination.
Yep.
And I also hope to do more here in Utah.
Okay.
Because I think one of the big things that makes my program unique is it's not just guided skiing. It's a whole experience, you know?
Yeah.
Every single week that we have a guest pro that comes, and you're going to ski with that person and see how being on a ski trip with that person is.
Yeah.
So it's like we have Julian Carr, Lindsay Dyer, Tim Durchie, whole roster of high level athletes.
Yeah.
That I personally love skiing with. Yeah. I've skied with all over the world. So it was kind of funny when we were creating this program, we're like, all right, which of our friends do we want to pay to come out and go on a ski trip?
That's
got
to be
right?
A weird thing too, is like you're paying your friend to do this.
Yeah.
Like, and that's one of the things I think people think that like, you know, this person, so like they're doing it for free, but you're
yeah,
still
no,
paying
that's not
them.
How it
yeah,
works.
It's still their job. Like they're a professional skier. Like they have to get paid for these things.
Totally.
So how do you, I guess in a way it's mixing business with pleasure. So how do you do that and keep it sustained?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be able to do it without my team of people, honestly.
Okay.
Like I trust my co-guides of my life every day.
Yeah.
And also just my support structure. Like my dad is huge in helping us run our business.
Yep.
He's a small business owner himself and has given me so much invaluable advice about how to run a company and how to be successful. And then my girlfriend Megan too is also hugely supportive in me being gone for huge amounts of time and, you know, taking care of our space. But, my kind of secondhand man is a snowboarder named Harrison Fitch. He's one of our junior guides this year, and he'll be working a ton on our athlete program. And he is probably the scariest person to follow at Snowbird. He's just an insanely strong rider. He comes from a comp background, was on Free Ride World Tour, over in Europe. And he does so much for me. I mean, I help him with everything that I possibly can, but when it comes to needing somebody to drive a car when I'm too tired, or, you know, give me a break to go take a nap, it's really Harrison and the rest of the team that allow me to have that time. And really we kind of have tried to foster a company culture of take care of each other, because 10 weeks is a long time.
Yeah.
And we ski a ton, and people pick up stupid nagging injuries all the time.
I'm sure.
And good karma comes back around.
Yeah.
You know? And, I think I've been lucky to have this team of people work with me, because they all really care about each other. They're all super fun, and they do a great job at what they do while also being a great partner, in everything else that happens behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a team, right? Like, I mean, that's kind of what it is. I mean, any business is like that, especially smaller businesses like you, because you work with those people so closely. This isn't a big corporation where you're not seeing, like, you're seeing those people all the time.
Oh yeah.
Is there a problem with that ever? Like, I mean, like, have there been issues for you? Like, cause I mean, you are with someone for 10 weeks in a country that's not the country that you normally live in. That's a long time. Like, I go on trips with buddies sometimes for 5 days, and at the end of the 5 days, I'm like, I want to fucking kill you. Like, that's like, I'm so done with this. Like,
yeah.
So how do you manage that?
Yeah.
Cause I mean, sure there's times it's where everybody's a person,
for
right?
Sure.
You know, but
we've all just traveled together a lot in the past, so we've kind of vetted out some of those issues. I remember, so Caitlin Farrington works for me, and she's incredible. But I remember a couple of years ago, we were down at a competition in South America and Argentina, and myself and a couple other people partied a little too hard at the after party, and we were supposed to be on the 8 a.m. bus back up north to Mendoza that morning. And Caitlin ran into our bedroom with a bucket of ice water and just poured it on all of us. And we woke up and we're like, oh my God. And somehow we stayed friends after that. So despite,
yeah,
you know,
if you can get through that, man.
Yeah, right.
That's
but yeah, I think really what it comes down to is, you know, one of my biggest personal core values is to just communicate as effectively as you possibly can. And if you have something to say, like, think about it and remove all of the emotions that you might have around some type of issue and focus on resolution. And as I guess I'm their boss, but I don't feel like their boss a lot of times, you know, because really I focus on this team dynamic, is that when I do have an issue, I just try to approach it as calmly as possible in a how do we solve this problem type of way.
Right.
And I hope that everyone that works for me knows how deeply I care for their success, because, you know, at Caldera, we only really work 10 weeks at a time. So everyone else has other stuff that's going on that is likely right. more important to their livelihood than this trip.
Right.
You know, and I'm constantly cognizant of that. It's like all these guys need to be okay at the end of the trip because they're all professional athletes.
Right.
All of these guys need to be happy because otherwise they're not going to interact with the guests the way that I want them to.
Mm.
And everything that I can do, usually it's tiny stuff like, hey, I'll give you a day off, you know, and I have some rollover guides that right. I come in and pay on a day rate to fill in, and they do a great job too. So yeah, it's just really keeping that line of communication constantly open and right. rewarding people when they do a really good job, both financially and also just with opportunity.
Yeah.
Just being like, all right, man, take the morning off and go on early ups and shred,
yeah.
you know, and come back refreshed.
Yeah, and sometimes opportunity is just as important as getting paid, you know,
totally.
Because that's like, that leads to you doing something else. I mean, that's, and I mentioned this earlier to you, like the most important thing to me right now is not that we get paid and like I get paid and get a paycheck from this. It's
yeah.
like that we want to keep growing it. Like I need
totally.
Money to keep building it. Like that's what the money goes to, not so that I can buy lunch. You know, like yeah, I have a job,
exactly.
you know, like
yeah.
I get paid from the job and like
exactly.
I just would love to not put the money into it just for the sake of putting money into it. I would like to
yeah.
see the growth. And sometimes, especially with social media and regular marketing in general,
mm-hmm.
I guess social media is in regular marketing at this point.
Yeah, which is crazy.
It's, yeah, which it's like, it's free, but it's, is it really? It's like, it's one of those things.
Totally.
But yeah, I don't know. It's definitely a strange thing. So speaking of that, you have sponsors as a skier and as a photographer, right? So
mm-hmm.
how do you reach out to sponsors? How do you, for people that are looking to get sponsored, right? Like young
yeah.
and up and coming athletes. Like what do you do? Because I get that
yeah.
question at the shop a lot. It's like,
totally.
And you, sometimes it's just like, hey dude, can you sponsor me? And like, what it's like, what do you do? How did you start to develop those relationships?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing is monetizing yourself in a way and showing that you are reliable in return on an investment.
Yeah.
It's that if you don't show that you can post or you don't have contacts to work with photographers or anything like that, what you can tangibly produce for a potential sponsor is likely limited.
Yeah.
Unless you have a massive Instagram following.
Yeah.
But 10,000 followers, 20,000 followers, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because the way that I look at it is a lot of people get free gear and
yeah.
that's awesome. That's great. That's kind of part of these brands. Organic marketing of let's put really good skiers in all sorts of gear. Let's have them dominate these local hills and show that our brand is quality.
Right.
But to really be quote unquote sponsored, you have to be getting supported financially in some way, whether that's paying for projects
right.
or paying for even something as simple as filmers. You know, filming is not cheap.
No.
Like $500 a day is a pretty discounted rate to go out and film with somebody with a red camera.
Yeah,
And a lot of these guys are doing that plus paying Hobbs time, heli hours,
yeah.
and doing all these things to produce their edits. So there's significant budget that needs to happen.
Right.
So when it comes to giving advice to up and coming athletes, I always say take pride in your skiing, but figure out two things. What makes you unique? And also, how can you actually show that?
Mm.
What photogs do you know?
Yeah.
What relationships do you have maybe with somewhere like Snowbird or Alta?
Right.
And what can you tangibly produce to show to somebody, whether you're sitting down with them at SIA or just sending them an email, that you can be a positive brand ambassador going forward that people can invest in?
Right.
And yeah, it's really at the end of the day about having those good relationships to
yeah.
maximize who you are as a person.
Ski industry is a lot smaller than people think too.
Totally.
Like it's like every, like you said, everybody knows everybody. So like
yeah.
it's one of those things that you kind of just have to keep trying for a little bit.
Yep.
And that's like, people will get discouraged, I guess, right away because mm-hmm. somebody didn't answer their email or didn't text them back or whatever.
Yep.
And it's like, everybody's got their own life. You're not everybody's, you're your priority.
Yeah.
And that's how it should be.
But yeah.
You're not everybody else's yet. Maybe
yeah.
you will be, but it's definitely not where you start off, at
yeah.
least for the majority, I think.
Yeah, and people get so wrapped up in small dollars about, you know,
yeah.
getting a free pair of skis or whatever it is. It's like, dude, a pair of skis, like you probably could get a pro form and go and buy that pair of skis for like $250 to $400.
Right.
Is that really worth stressing out and like not having fun actually
no.
skiing because your ski sponsor couldn't send you something or
yeah.
whatever happened to you? And because you will get told no all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that I experience on pretty much a daily basis.
Yeah.
And I've learned to understand that no isn't necessarily something that's personal. Yeah. It's just all about whether what you want to do fits with the brand that you're approaching. Right. Whether it's you as an athlete, whether it's you as a, you know, a media project that you might be pitching or whatever, you know, and it's get very comfortable with the word no, because it's going to happen quite a bit.
Yeah. And no's not a bad thing. I mean, totally. It's like everybody's got to run their own business. You are your own business, right? Mm-hmm. So like they have to do their part and yep. you do your part. And that's, it is what it is. So sponsorship is such a weird thing to me. It's like somebody's yeah. paying you to say their shit's good.
Yeah.
Like, but it's like, but I mean, obviously you want good sponsors. So who are you sponsored by? Why do you like to work with those brands?
Yep. Yeah. So I'm sponsored by Giro, Icelandic, and the North Face.
Okay.
Those are kind of my main guys. And then I have a deal with Black Diamond as well that supports our company.
Cool.
So I use a lot of their gear. Yeah, all of those brands are really near and dear to my heart. Icelandic, you got to meet our team manager, Scotty Ramirez, today.
Right.
He's great, really the man for me at Icelandic. Like, I know everyone else, and I live with Julian Carr, so Julian, yep. you know, kind of also is a huge part of that relationship. But Scotty has to be one of my favorite people to work with.
Yep.
And a big reason why I am with Icelandic is simply so that I can hang out with Scotty and go skiing with him and work with him.
Yeah.
And the skis are absolutely bomb-proof. Like, I'm notorious for breaking things. We were talking about this on the tram and people know that about me. They're like, oh, Eric's boots are broken again. Or, oh, Eric ripped all the way through his jacket again. And yeah, Icelandic skis, I've had a really tough time breaking. So that's been a huge benefit for me as a guide to, I mean, I pretty much only travel with one pair of skis. The 115 is super versatile and I can rely on it every day. And reliability to me is the biggest thing. Giro, those guys have been great and supported me. I started on the Wasatch team here, which is this kind of unique amateur level team that pulls in photographers and athletes to work together. And I was able to progress from there largely because of my work all over the world with some of their higher end athletes.
Right.
And yeah, I ski with them. They're here in Park City. I ski with them all the time.
Really?
We get to go out and rip, and like they ski here at Alton Snowbird.
Sick.
And I mean, I love the gear. Their new Jackson helmet is far and away the favorite helmet I've ever worn. It's just super light and comfortable, protects my dome.
Yeah.
And I'm a pretty big always wear your helmet guy.
Yeah.
I did have a pretty bad head injury years and years and years ago. So that's something that I don't compromise on at all.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
I'm saying that as I didn't wear a helmet today, but it's like, I mean, it's all right. We only did like 5 runs, so it's fine.
Yeah.
But I mean, you definitely, I agree. It's, and I don't normally ski without a helmet either, but I wasn't even sure that I was skiing this week. So it's like, I'm glad I just brought gloves, jacket, goggles. Like that's enough. Like I'm happy I did anything. So
totally.
But it's good. And North Face is new for you, right?
Yeah. Brand new. So they're through our company pretty much. And then I'm working with them on a couple media projects that I'm pretty excited about, but for them, they're kind of a beacon sponsor. You know what I mean? Where people look at that and say, okay, you must be legitimate if you're working with this brand. Like there's quite a few brands out there that are like that.
Yeah.
And really what I want out of the North Face is more than gear. Their gear is awesome, but it's access to their athlete team.
Right.
And access to just project funding, you know, being able to pitch them on some of the more outlandish ideas that I've ever had. Like Scotty and I did a huge mountaineering trip across Patagonia years and years and years ago. And there's this massive unskied volcano that Scotty and I want to go tag because he's a licensed captain. So we have this whole sea to summit trip pitch developed that will likely be delivering to North Face in the fall. And we've talked to other big brands like National Geographic about. Mm. And, you know, it's kind of one step beyond the ski industry of brands with real budget that can support some of your bigger dreams and some of the, I mean, what really it is more expensive dreams.
Mm. Yeah. I guess that's a good way to look at it. And that's like originally, like that's kind of how I looked at guests on the show almost is like, I want to talk to everybody and like, I'm personally interested. And like, I would talk to everybody I could talk to if I could.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, like you need to show that you're having guests on that people really want to listen to and want to hear their story so that you can have everyone on, you know, because otherwise it's just like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, you know, it's like, what are you doing here? Why are you wasting all your time and your money doing a podcast? Because, and it's because I like doing it, but you also need to show something, you know, you need to show that you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
So, and I guess it kind of works both ways. And I don't like looking at people like,
or brands, like, this is how I'm going to make things better for myself. But yeah, you kind of need to do it in a way for other people to mm-hmm. feel your product's a little more legitimate.
Yeah.
And it's a weird thing, and it's uncomfortable for me because I don't like asking people for sponsorships. Mm-hmm. I don't like asking people for money or to come do things that they don't want to do. Like, if you want to do it, you're welcome to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of that's where I think we're at now. And I'm hoping that's where it goes from now on. Like, if you want to come on and talk, I'm willing to have whoever. And I think that's the best way to go about doing it at this point. So, but yeah, it sounds like things are going well for you, and it's sick, man.
Yeah. I'm really excited about the direction that we've gone this last year. And I mean, for me, a big part of my skiing and my company is being able to give back to all these people that I see as extremely deserving.
Mm.
Because there's a lot of people in the ski industry that get ignored for X, Y, Z reason. You know, it doesn't you can't really put your finger on it.
Yeah.
Like, they might have made one bad sponsorship decision, or they might just be too young, or you don't know. But where I'm at now and having the ability to actually sponsor people, which is something that I never thought I would ever do, I can reward those guys and I can give them an opportunity, whether it's being in front of my lens or being in front of, you know, Aiden, our creative director's lens with the big camera, to break through in a way and to get what they, I guess, have deserved, because there's so many people that are just so talented. And,
right.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, where can people find you on social media in general and your company?
Yeah, so you can find me on social media at esalesski. So that's ESALESSKI. That's my personal account. And then Caldera Guides, our handle is just at Caldera Guides. And our website is calderaguides.com. So I hope that people who are listening to the show have heard of us before, because we have been aggressively marketing through a lot of our athletes this year. And if you haven't, I hope you hear of us soon. But yeah, we're going to be doing really cool things over the next several years. And we're developing programs at all different price points in all sorts of locations across really the world.
That's awesome.
I'm excited to bring that opportunity to people.
That's awesome. Yeah. So if people want to book a trip, how far in advance do you need? I was just about to wrap this up, but now I have a question. So how far in advance do you need to book these kind of things?
Really depends. We're 98%-ish full right now. Like, I think we only have 3 spots left for this winter.
Okay.
But sometimes people call me and they're like, hey, this is the only date I have. And I was like, well, lucky you. But we pre-sell a lot of our stuff in like April for Japan.
Okay.
And we give discounts then. So we'll be doing a huge social media marketing campaign around that time.
Okay.
And we give about a 20% discount.
Sick.
So people will see that. And that's the best time to book, because Sick. That's when the schedules open. And you can have more kind of control about when you can come and what athlete you might want to ski with and all those other things.
Sick. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you doing this, dude.
Yeah, of course, man. It was super fun and awesome shredding today. Always good to get out on the
hill. It's a blast. I appreciate you showing me around.
Totally.
That was our episode with Eric Sales. I hope you guys enjoyed it. He's a great dude. I had a ton of fun skiing around with him for the day. It's Snowboard's Beautiful. Shout out to Dave. I don't know how to say Dave's last name. Amaral, maybe? It's definitely Amaral. If it's not Dave, let me know. It is at OZ Skier. He's just a good dude. He runs marketing at Snowboard, and he has definitely changed the way that they do things in terms of marketing their hill. So shout out to him. I appreciate the hookup for the day. He's a great dude. And Eric, once again, thanks for the tour.
Thanks for the chat. And we'll hopefully see you out in Japan one of these days.
If you guys have questions for Eric or for any of our past guests or future guests, make sure you send it to us in a DM on social media or email it to us. It's adam@outofpodcast.com. Once again, thanks for listening.